Welcome back to Yang Daily. I'll be your host, Alex Cheney, bringing you all the Yang news you need to live your life right. Boy, howdy, we got a lot to cover today. No time to waste, let's dig in. In today's police corruption, we have cops in Meadow, New York, aggressively arresting a black man for slightly brushing against an officer's arm after the officer stopped in front of the man while he was walking. It's arguable the officer stopped intentionally to cause the contact, and other officers responded very quickly and aggressively to the completely innocent touch, clearly waiting for an excuse. Meanwhile, a New Orleans police officer was suspended for unacceptable remarks made on social media, where he called protesters savages and animals, used foul language, and said, quote, "This expletive has moved on from being about George Floyd. I am running them over and shooting if lethal force were my only way out. The a-hole under the truck got what he deserved," end quote. The last references a man who was fatally run over by a FedEx truck during the protests. In Atlanta, the shooting of Rayshard Brooks has cost another Wendy's its life. Peaceful protests were conducted to block the interstate, and sometime later, the Wendy's where Rayshard was killed caught fire. George Floyd's death has been a tragedy for everyone but police and arsonists, who both seem to be having a hell of a time. The other casualty was the police chief, Erica Shields, what a name for an officer, right, who resigned following the shooting. We also got footage of most of the incident leading to Rayshard's death. Upon waking him, police performed a sobriety test, which found him intoxicated. The officers attempted to arrest him for drunk driving. He fought them and got a hold of a taser. He then ran away with the officers in close pursuit. He eventually turns and fires the taser at the closest officer, at which point the other shoots him. He clearly wasn't making good decisions. Was it appropriate to respond to a taser with deadly force? I don't think so. If it had been a lone officer, then probably yes. But with two of them, no. There wasn't really any need to stop him escaping. He clearly wasn't going to drive drunk without his vehicle, and they can arrest him later or call for backup to subdue him without lethal force. Again, if our system were not set up to respond to a man sleeping in his car with armed officers, this almost certainly would not have escalated to death. Protests are also still raging, even 3 weeks after the George Floyd incident. In Paris, thousands of protesters jam-packed into a public square. Hundreds or thousands marched in Richmond, Virginia. Tampa, Florida saw thousands in its largest and most coordinated march yet, and on it goes through Scranton, Pennsylvania, Madison, Wisconsin, Grandview Heights, Ohio, Seattle, Washington, New York City, etc. This movement looks to have legs for the long haul. It gets more complicated in London, where a group of counter-protesters have organized, supposedly to defend statues from being vandalized or destroyed. However, when the Black Lives Matter rally heard that the counters were planning to show up, BLM canceled the march, but the counters still showed up and quickly got into a fight with police. So there's a bizarre three-way battle of sorts happening now, except the BLM protesters seem the only ones not looking for violence at this point. We're seeing more progress in legislation. The Miami-Dade and Hialeah police departments were the latest to ban the use of the carotid triangle restraint chokehold, which is a type that restricts blood flow to the brain, causing swift blackout, followed by death, depending on the duration. Iowa State recently unanimously passed a police reform bill through both the Senate and the House in record time and with protesters watching from the upper floor as the bill was voted on. The bill will allow the Attorney General to investigate and prosecute a law enforcement official if his or her actions cause death, prohibit the use of chokeholds except in very specific and limited situations outlined in code, prevent law enforcement officers and reserve officers who have been fired for serious misconduct from being employed as law enforcement officers in Iowa, and set out de-escalation techniques and prevention of bias training. Legislators say these are only the first steps. They are a pretty good start. A more independent source than the Attorney General would be best for investigations. I'd be curious what the exceptions are for the chokeholds, and bias training has not shown any evidence of being effective, but banning chokeholds, providing more independent investigation into every incident of death, providing a code of de-escalation techniques, and most of all, preventing the hiring of cops with a record are all good moves. Boston declared racism an emergency and public health crisis, which doesn't mean much, but Mayor Walsh says he's committed to reform and that he's reallocating police overtime funding to public safety and community health. The money will go to housing security, ending youth homelessness, and to emergency clinicians and mental health supports provided by the police when they respond to people in crisis. Not sure how much money that is, and unfortunately he's also committed to implicit bias training, but it's a start. New York's Governor Cuomo signed police reform bills banning chokeholds and repealing 50A, which shielded police misconduct reports from the public. Following up on their decision to disband the police department, Minneapolis unanimously passed a resolution to replace the city's police department with a community-led public safety team. The resolution will kick off a year-long process to devise a new public safety system. Microsoft has now joined IBM and Amazon in denying use of their facial recognition software to police and calling on Congress to pass laws limiting the use of such AI to prevent mass surveillance of the type seen in China. Moving on, the competition between Mike and Booker has come to a head, as Booker released a primary poll and Mike responded by denouncing it as inaccurate. As much as I respect Mike otherwise, I have to say that his behavior here is highly disappointing. His statement dismissed the poll, heavily implying it to be a Twitter poll, which it was not. It was an online poll conducted by YouGov and professionally weighted and administered. Is an online poll worse than a phone poll? Usually, yes. Is it the same as a Twitter poll? Not even remotely. Beyond the disgraceful handling by Breuer's campaign, the poll itself is quite damning for Mike's chances in the primary. For the Democratic primary, it has 47% planning to vote McGrath, 41% for Booker, and just 6% for Mike. This is partially explained in the section where people were polled on awareness of candidates, showing that 53% of voters hadn't heard of Mike at all, versus 21% for Booker and just 4% for McGrath. Suffice it to say, unless this poll is wildly inaccurate, Mike has no chance in the primary. At this point, I would say it's on Mike to provide a trustworthy counterpoll that shows him well-positioned, or else he should put his support behind Booker. As much as I like Mike as a candidate and think he's probably the strongest on paper, and maybe even in the general, if he can't get to the general, it's pointless. And we cannot allow McGrath to go against McConnell because it will be a certain loss. The YouGov poll had a sample size of 300, which is about one-third the size of most presidential polls. Smaller than I'd prefer, but Kentucky is obviously much smaller than America as well. The good news is that the poll places Booker much closer to McGrath than I honestly dared to hope that either of them would get. If all of Mike's 6% joined him, Booker would be tied with her. There is a real opportunity there. South Korea is quickly becoming a leader in UBI. After having passed a basic income for the crisis and later made it universal, it has become the single bipartisan issue in an increasingly polarized political system. Both parties are now considering it a policy plank going forward, and a third party has arisen, the first ever single-issue party in the nation. That issue? UBI, of course. I hope this is where we are leading in the U.S. as well. I want to see UBI become the central issue in the upcoming election. We have results from another trial of a four-day workweek. A PR firm in England, Radioactive Public Relations, has permanently reduced their work week from 5 days to four, reducing hours worked from 36 to 31, without any change in pay and only slight reductions in time off otherwise, resulting in 44 extra days off per year. The result has been an increase in business and profitability, with employees reporting a hugely better work-life balance and no impact on quality of care for customers. Interestingly, the company also polled the employees on what they've done with their extra time off. The answers ranged from quality time with family, to volunteering for charity, to starting a side business, to pursuing higher education, to exploring new healthy hobbies. Very cool. But we have some very sad news in the business world too. Perhaps the most tragic victim of the economic crisis so far. That's right. Chuck E. Cheese has filed for bankruptcy and says they may have to close all their locations. We may never again have the privilege of being in a room full of screaming children while a teenager in a rat costume peddles birthday pizza and little Johnny goes missing, last seen entering the ball pit. America will never be the same. Quick shout out to meal kit company Blue Patron for giving all their employees the day off on election day, as well as assisting with voter registration and helping transport people to the polls. Talk about going above and beyond for democracy. That's the kind of good press I would like to see every company earning. Show them some love, gang. Finally, our own Will Lexham successfully organized a large march of Asian Americans for Black Lives Matter. In his own words, "I've never witnessed Asians protest anything in my lifetime. Wished for 1,000, would have been ecstatic with 500, and realistically thought 200. 2,000 came for Asians for Black Lives March." End quote. That's a win for sure. Great work, Will. You and Yang are definitely proving that we could use more Asian American leaders. Another highlight of the rally was Rob Chin reading his own rap poem he wrote about convincing his Asian parents to support Black Lives Matter. I can't do it justice, so I'm just going to say it's very powerful. Got my eyes a bit moist even, and you should definitely follow the link below and give it a listen. And that'll do it for today's Yang Daily. Check out Rob Chin's excellent poem, show Blue Apron and Will Lexham some love, bookmark the 4-day workweek results, help spread the word on coordinating with protesters to give the movement clear policy goals. If you're going out to protest, wear protection, especially on your eyes, head, and throat. If you get arrested while protesting, remember not to say anything without a lawyer. Whatever you choose to do, be wise, be safe, and act with measured purpose toward real solutions. And don't forget to Yang Daily.